This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, number 112. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com. You can email us on
mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com.
And you can call us on
020-88-167-691.
I'm David Hinchliffe.
And I'm Berners.
So, Berners, we're into our first league game of the season for my club and also for our adopted club for the year in Edinburgh, Watsonians. And it was a pretty successful start for everyone involved there. But how did you get on at the weekend?
I had a little pre-season friendly playing against an old colleague. He was opening the bowling. I was opening the batting.
Yep.
The rest is history. 68. I was caught in one of those conundrums. Do I look to kind of go explosive from the start here? He couldn't really get out. So I potted along to kind of about 20 off of about 20 overs. Mm. Was getting plenty of chirp. I thought, we'll up the ante here. And eventually fell to a miserable shot across the line. But yeah, it was a lovely day and good win for us. First league game next week.
Fantastic. And it's a good venue where you played, a nice ground.
Yeah, really nice. Yeah, it's in good condition. Beaconsfield up in Buckinghamshire, so it was really nice. Good day out all round. I was nearly got to turn my arm over as well, but unfortunately the other part-timer managed to finish them off. Well, I think really they finished themselves off, but yeah, nearly got called into action.
Well, the main thing is with the pre-season games is that you just blow away the cobwebs, don't you? Get a little run out and enjoy your tea and have a good shower afterwards.
Yeah, my ground fielding was abysmal, not getting down to the ball, going kind of underneath my hand and stuff. That needs a bit of work by next week. But when it means points, you always pull out all the stops, don't you, eh, boy?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so you'll be first at training on training night, will you?
Absolutely not.
You play in the more of a Corinthian way, don't you? It's all about turning up and performing on the day.
Exactly, participation. So what happened with your good self? I heard you took one right in the choppers.
Well, I did. Yeah, I'm sporting a healthy purple bruise under my right eye, thanks to an erratic pitch, a new bowler, and me not being ready for the one that spit off just full of a length. And I tried to get my hands there, realised that I wasn't going to get my hands there because it was flying at me at a rate of knots because he pushed it through a little bit faster than normal. So I just turned my head to the side and it clunked me on the cheek.
Oh, gosh.
At tea, I had a great big lump about the size of an egg on my cheek. So I iced it and it turned into a bruise, luckily. So the main thing is, though, that we won. It was our first league game, so it was an important game. We thought the opposition were going to be quite strong, but they were incredibly weak. They'd lost six of their first team, including their two star players from last year. So they were down to a wicketkeeper who had never kept wicket before, which was incredibly village, watching him throw himself around and about 25 byes go past him during the day. We bowled them out for 120 in just over 30 overs. And then we knocked him off in about 25 overs. I wasn't required to bat, and I didn't get any dismissals behind the stumps. But I am sporting a memory of the day as we speak. I've got to say, though, the highlight of the day for me wasn't that we were finished by quarter past five or whatever it was, some ridiculously early finish, but they had a proper cake at tea, which you needed to slice yourself. And it had strawberries and cream on top. It was absolutely wonderful. So I had my money's worth there, I can tell you.
So your jaw wasn't too bad then. You got your gob right around that.
Yeah, my jaw. You always know you're in for a good tea, don't you? When they put out the bowl of pasta and you think, they put in some effort here. As soon as the bowl of pasta comes out, you know they put in a little bit of effort. And then the cakes arrived, and then we were really talking.
Good stuff.
We've got also an interview this week with captain of Watsonian CC, Craig Wright, and he's going to tell us what happened in their first league game as well, their campaign for the Scottish National Premier League began with a game against Ayr, which is quite a journey from Edinburgh. So we'll see how they did a little bit later on. But they took a strong side out to Ayr. And although they were missing a couple of their Scottish players who were playing in the CB 40 competition for Scotland, we'll see if their star player weakness cost them any points in that game. Now, it's cold and horrible in Australia. I expect it's down to probably about 15 degrees by now, Berners, don't you?
Oh, it must be horrible. I feel really sorry for them.
Yeah, they might have to break out their thin sweaters.
Yeah, it will all be AFL mad there at the moment, running around that pitch like a bunch of wild animals. They will be cutting up the square. Groundsman will have his head under the pillow.
Yeah, I do wonder what the groundsman make of that. What do they have to do to put the square to bed before the AFL players arrive on those big pitches?
Like a load of rampaging bulls running across your summer fair, that is. I've seen those boys training. It's not nice. Bearing in mind, I was doing a little bit of cricket training out in Australia. Every time I used to get out, the coach, Kim Hughes at the time, made us do a circuit of the oval wearing our full batting kit. And I used to think, blimey, this is hard work, but it's nothing compared to what those boys are doing over there. It's like close to Royal Marine Camp, what they were doing.
You've got to admire the fitness of those guys. I mean, I don't think there's a sport where you have to be fitter in terms of being able to combine endurance, you know, the endurance of a marathon runner with the power of a, you know, of a much less difficult sport to run around, like, you know, like, say, football or rugby, where there's a lot less running around. And because of the rules of the game, the play can be in front of you quite a lot of the time. But in Australian rules, the play happens all around you. So you don't not only have to be running around, but you have to, and jumping and throwing and hitting and kicking, but you also have to be aware of what's going on in a 360-degree arc. It's a ridiculous game. I don't know what's going on with it, but the Aussies love it, don't they?
Yeah, well, our noble leader, of course, is Australian himself, and he preaches the game to me. And we'll find out whether he listens to this podcast, actually, because the team he supports, Richmond, absolutely awful. Trollop, they are. I mean, I don't know much about the game, but I know for a fact that the Bombers, the boys in the red sash, is the way forward. They're going to be lifting the championship this season. And I will stand proud and stand firm behind them. I'm still trying to establish the rules. And of course, you get awarded points when you miss as well. Quite ironic, really. But yeah, Richmond, absolute dirty breed they are. So hopefully he listens to this and we might feel a little bit of wrath, but I very much doubt it. He'll be going through his archives trying to find a championship medal.
Of course, back in cricket news, we got some high-profile cricket coaching news in that former England coach Duncan Fletcher has made his way to the Indian team. That should be an interesting matchup, shouldn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Seems to work for them, doesn't it? Getting guys from other cultures that have coached for other teams and getting them together with, well, arguably the best set of players in the world. But I don't know how he's going to fit in there with some of the profiles you have in that changing room with the likes of Tendulkar, Dhoni, an outsider coming in, probably changing certain things, the way they practice, maybe even the way they actually play. So, yeah, it'd be really interesting. I'd like to know a lot more about that, actually.
I think that's where your style as a coach really comes into the equation, doesn't it, at that level? Because, you know, it's not about teaching somebody how to play a cover drive. It's more about keeping everything running while the important people get on with their important jobs. So, you know, somebody like Fletcher, who likes to take a little bit of a back seat and take the heat off the players and then get on with some of the technical stuff in the background when required, I think he'll probably suit the Indian team, which is full of personalities, because Fletcher, I think, avoids that, doesn't he? He avoids the limelight and he likes to just get on with, you know, giving throwdowns in the nets and helping people do what they want to do. But, you know, somebody with a different style, like, you know, our batting coach, for example, Gary Palmer, you know, he's got a very much in your face, do it my way style, completely different style, equally effective, but only effective in a different set of circumstances compared to the Fletcher way of doing things. So,
yeah.
You know, I think probably somebody like Gary Palmer, great coach as he is, would maybe struggle in the Indian setup because there's so much personality and so many egos in that dressing room. But somebody like Fletcher, he'd fit in nicely because he takes the step back.
Yeah, well, it's just about galvanising them, isn't it, really? And he's obviously good at that. And I think he actually came in as a referral from the outgoing coach, Gary Kirsten. So, he's not going to be doing that if he didn't think he could do the job. So he must have known what the job was all about, having done it and been successful. And he said, hey, up, lads, get this fella in. He'll carry on where I've left off. So I'm sure it will all go swimmingly. Hopefully England can get in amongst them.
Interesting series coming up in the summer.
Absolutely.
It's time now on the show for the ever-popular questions section, and Berners has been rummaging around his sack for a couple of questions. So what have you got for us this week, Berners?
Okay, so we've got a question here from Naveen. He's just got a coaching practice question, actually, just regarding throwdowns. And he's saying that in a game, traditionally uses a trigger movement, press back and across. And he's just wondering whether he should use this when he has throwdowns or should he stand still? Is the main emphasis of throwdowns to stand still and hit the ball, or should he apply his normal kind of framework at the crease?
As ever, the answer with this is not simple. It's the answer is it depends. If you're looking to recreate the situation of batting in the middle as closely as possible, then when you're doing your throwdowns, you do want to do your trigger move. And the way you can do your trigger move effectively is you say to the person who's doing the throwdowns, can you take two or three paces walking in and then do the throwdown? So whether they're doing the throwdown from 18 yards or whatever it is, get them to take two or three steps back, walk, and then throw. And then that little walk in gives you the chance to recreate what the bowler would be doing as he's running up and going into his bounce. So you can time that trigger movement with the throwdown from the thrower. If they're just standing there, it's a lot more difficult to time it with the trigger move. If you're using a bowling machine, then that's a lot more difficult. You should, again, if you're using the trigger move as part of your recreation of a match situation, then it's a bit more difficult because there's a slight delay between feeding the ball into the bowling machine and it popping out the other side. That can be made worse by if the ball doesn't quite go straight in and it does that little bobble. I don't know if you've ever fed a bowling machine, Bernard. I'm sure you have, but you get that little bobble as it goes into the machine, and in. And that messes up your trigger move completely.
hard to time it correctly with the release of the ball there.
Yeah, if you're recreating a match situation, then do the best you can with that trigger move. The reason you would stand still would be from a throwdown or from a bowling machine, would be if you're working on a particular shot and you want to groove that shot in a particular way. If you're doing that, you want to stand still as much as you can. So say you're grooving the on drive, for example, and someone's giving you a throwdown to groove the on drive. Not the best way to groove a shot, but say that's what's happening. Then you don't want to be doing your trigger move. You want to be standing still at the position you would be in when your trigger move is finished, and then you can go into playing the shot. The reason for that is, you don't want to get the timing all messed up with that. You want to get the timing as perfect as you can, and you know where the ball's going to bounce, so you don't have to worry about judging the line and length of the ball because you know exactly where it's going to bounce, and you can move from your stance position to playing the shot smoothly without worrying about trigger moving. Same with a bowling machine as well. If you're using the bowling machine to groove a particular shot, then don't do your trigger move. Stand where you are. In fact, it's even better to start with your feet in the position that you're going to finish with your feet in. So say, with your weight over your front foot, your both feet pointing down the wicket if you're playing an on drive, but the bat back, and then you can just swing the bat through the line. So you don't have to worry about moving your feet. Then when you've got that upper body positioning right, then you can go back to your stance. So it very much depends on the particular situation. Do the best that you can. It's certainly against a bowling machine, it's difficult. But the key really is to make things as simple as possible when you're practicing. As long as you're thinking, okay, how can I make it as realistic as possible, but as simple as possible, then you're never going to be far wrong. What's the next question, Bernard?
Well, another question here from Billy Croft. He wants to know, when fielding in a slip cordon, where exactly should he be looking and what should he be doing to enhance his chances of catching the ball? He's also fielding gully and also square leg. So when you kind of side on to the wicket, where should you be looking and how can he kind of improve his chances of success in these positions?
Well, that's a very good question, actually. It does get asked a lot. The standard answer for that is, if you're fielding at first slip, watch the ball, because the ball isn't going to deviate that much when it's coming to first slip. So you can watch the ball all the way off the edge of the bat into your hands. If you're fielding anywhere wider than that, so anything from second slip through to gully, then watch the edge of the bat, because the edge of the bat is where the ball's going to come off, and it's going to deviate at such an angle that you won't have time, if you're watching the ball, to adjust your eyes, whereas you know it's going to come off the bat. So if you keep your eye on the bat, you know roughly that when the ball is coming towards you, your vision is in the right place. Of course, slip catching is not easy, so there hasn't really been any research into exactly what is the best way to do it. So I think it's kind of quite a personal thing. So because a lot of it is to do with reaction as much as it is to do with where you're looking. So the key is, if you've got your head still, you've got your eyes level, and you're looking in the general direction of the ball, then you can practice it as much as you can and hope that when the ball comes, you're relaxed and confident enough that you don't panic. You see it early and it goes and it nicely nestles into your hands. We had a catch this weekend, actually, where the guy was at second slip. It was a genuine edge that flew, and he did the typical early season catch of catching it in the bread basket and then closing his forearms around it and then collapsing in a heap and then picking it out of his stomach and raising it in the air to show that it didn't touch the ground. Well, in the book, they all count, don't they? So not the most graceful of catches, but it counted. And at this time of year, when you're not seeing the ball as well as you maybe you are in August, if you're in the UK, then that's a good way to go. You can. There is a growing theory that you can do both. You can watch the ball and you can watch the bat at the same time. I mean, there's no reason why you can't keep the ball in your peripheral vision as you're focusing on the bat. You're perfectly capable to look at two things at once, as long as you're keeping the ball in your peripheral vision. Then as the ball arrives in your peripheral vision, then you change the focus from the bat to the ball. So you can see at a glance whether the batsman's going forward or back, because that's going to make a difference to where the ball is coming from. Also, what kind of shot they're playing. If they're going back to play a pull shot, then the ball isn't likely to end up at first slip. But if they're going back to play a back foot drive, there's a chance they're going to nick off, or a back foot defensive shot, there's a chance to nick off. So you can sort of anticipate slightly. The other area, which is square of the wicket, so square leg, say, cover point. Again, anticipation is the important part here. Keep your eye on the batsman. If he's looking to shape to play back to cut or pull, if you're at square leg to pull to cut, if you're at point, then the ball's going to be coming towards you at a rate of knots, if it does, most likely, if he's stepping back to play an aggressive shot. So you set yourself like a goalkeeper and get ready to pick up the ball as quickly as you can. It's not easy, because the deviation is a lot, but you know roughly where it's going to be coming from. So focus as intensely as you can on the rough area that the ball's going to be coming from, and let your reactions take over. If, on the other hand, he's looking to go forward, maybe he's going to play a little defensive push. And then your job then is not to act like a goalkeeper to stop the ball in football, but it's going to be like a proper fielder. In other words, you're going to be running in, you're going to be maybe doing an overarm or an underarm throw at the stumps. So you want to be moving forwards quickly. You know, that Jonty Rhodes style, when you're almost on the run as the batsman comes forward, because you know that if the ball is going to come into your area, it's going to be a little defensive nudge. So that comes with practice. So the more you do it, the more you feel in that position, the better you get at being able to anticipate that. Keep your eye as firmly rooted on the area you know where you think the ball is going to be, and then get to that ball as quickly as possible. Again, it's something you can practice. One really good practice you can do is to get one of those catch it, you know, those catch it boards, burners. You've seen those, haven't you, with the plastic ramps?
Yeah, they're good. With the springs.
Yeah, clever little, much easier to get around than a catching cradle, I can tell you. Get one or two of those. Go and stand, you know, roughly about as far as away from the catch it board as you would be away from the batsman, and get someone to throw balls at the catch it board at a decent pace, and then you can get the idea of anticipating, the idea of picking the ball up early, because the catch it could go anywhere. You'll probably miss quite a few balls because the catch it fly all over the place. But don't worry about that. The key is that you're watching the ball as closely as possible and aiming to get to as many as you can.
Cool.
And just for those of you who didn't get a question answered this week, don't forget that you can win a prize, which is a coaching course, an online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. So you can get coaching from the likes of Gary Palmer, who we mentioned earlier in the show, all delivered online, videos, worksheets, articles, everything you need to start improving your game, batting, bowling, fielding, mental game, fitness, captaincy, a million other things as well. So take a look at that and send your questions in to us to get your prize if your question is selected. I'm joined again by Craig Wright, captain of Watsonian Cricket Club, our adopted team for the 2011 British summer. Hi, Craig. You played your first game this weekend, I understand.
Yeah, we did. Yeah. We managed to get a win on the board, so that was pleasing.
Quite a long way to travel, wasn't it? Does that make a difference, a long travelling time to away games?
It makes a difference for my back, I'll tell you that much. But we're actually quite fortunate this year. We don't actually have too many long journeys. The majority of our games are in Edinburgh, actually, so we're not quite as badly affected in terms of travel as some of the teams who are sort of based in the sort of further away locales, if you like, the likes of Aberdeenshire and in the north, or Ayr, who we played against on Saturday there. That those are the sort of teams that every away game they've got a fair journey to make, so we can't really complain about that, to be honest.
Now, you had a couple of star players out. They were busy representing Scotland. So what sort of a side did you field?
Yeah, well, I mean, it makes a difference to our batting lineup when Ewan and Ryan are away. We're obviously happy that they're away playing for the national team, but certainly weakens our top six batting a little bit. But you know, we managed to do pretty well on Saturday, to be fair, to make 230. Stuart Chalmers played really well, made 70 odd. Ewan Stubbs opening the batting for the first time in quite a while, made I think 49. And with a couple of 30s to get us up to 230, which was a competitive total and turned out to be a winning total. So, you know, it's very much the case that for clubs like ourselves who've got national representatives and who are going to miss those players for a few games, it's just really important that we manage to sort of muddle through, if you like, when they're not here, and then really capitalise in making sure that we certainly win our games when we've got a full-strength team available.
That's a unique problem. We talk about roles quite a lot, in the importance of players having confidence in knowing what they're supposed to be doing, what their job is in the team. So how do you manage the role of someone who's coming into the side and knowing that they're replacing somebody who is off to play a high level of cricket, and when that person comes back, they're in the firing line?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's something we spoke about before the start of the season, you know, with players being away on an international duty, or if we have injuries, or you know, guys are losing form, there's other guys that can step up. So, you know, I think there's an acceptance, I think, from the players that there will be times when maybe one or two of them are playing second team, but will be asked to come in and do a job in the first team. And we're fortunate that we've got some experienced guys as well as some young players who can come in and do a job, the likes of Ewan Stubbs, I mentioned there, who who hasn't opened the batting for the team for quite a while, but was asked to do that job on Saturday, and you know did it really, really well. Ewan Robertson as well, who's a second team captain, who came in and batted at six. So you know we've got guys who can step up to the mark when they're asked to do so. It's just a case of, you know, I was discussing that during the week and then knowing that they're playing, knowing where they're going to be batting, and then focusing mentally on the job that they've got to do on a Saturday, and certainly the guys did that on the weekend.
What would you say the key roles were this weekend? Who played the most important role in the side in the win, and what was that role?
Well, certainly, I mean, I think the man of the match would have been Stuart Chalmers, who made 70 odd with the bat and then took three wickets. Stuart's a player who's been training with the national squad and been on the sort of fringe of the national setup over the last year or two, and it's very much the case that when, you know, we've got a couple of players away playing for the national team and we're missing two of our better players and two of our better batters, that the other experienced batsmen stand up and do a job, and Stuart certainly did that on Saturday. You know, he held the innings together. Had a good partnership with the pro who made 30. Ewan Stubbs, as I said, made 40 odd open the batting, but Ewan said, Stuart Chalmers certainly held the innings together and got us through to 230, and then bowled, opened the bowling, probably didn't bowl his best with the new ball, but came back in the middle and towards the end of the innings and put in a good shift to make sure that we kept there to under 230. So he was certainly the man of the match, but there was other useful contributions as well.
And is that what you see him doing regularly, batting up the order, playing a kind of anchor role and then coming on and bowling in three spells throughout an innings? Is that a regular thing?
He would normally bat five, but he went up a spot on Saturday, as I say, with the batter being unavailable. And he took that responsibility in his stride. From a bowling point of view, he bowled first change last year. But was actually a most successful bowler, and I think the most successful bowler actually in the league in terms of wickets taken last year. But I asked him to open the bowling Saturday specifically because the key phase of the game, I felt, would be how we bowled to their professional player, Michael Papps, who's played Test cricket for New Zealand. And I just thought Stuart opening the bowling, he swings the ball away from the right hander. I felt he could get Papps out, albeit he didn't. With a new ball, but so he came back and bowled pretty well in the second and third spell. So I asked him to do a slightly different job from what he's normally asked to do on Saturday, and whether we revisit that again with him taking the new ball will be something we'll decide in training this week.
And what will the factors be in that? Will it be how well he bowls, just how well he bowls, or how he feels about how it went, or what's your what's your decision making process? How do you go through that?
Yeah, I think primarily the most important thing is the player being comfortable with the role that they're being asked to do. It's not always the case that you can accommodate that, but certainly as much as I can, I would try to ask players to do a job that they were comfortable with. I'm not 100% sure, having spoken to Stuart, that he's 100% comfortable opening the bowling. I think he prefers bowling first change, so we'll have a chat about that in training during the week, and when they revert back to him bowling first change. We've got Paddy Sadler, who opened the bowling for us last year, who's available to play this weekend. He's down south at the university, so isn't available for the majority of the first couple of months of the season, but he's coming up to play this weekend, so we've actually got another opening bowling option available to us this weekend, so we might be able to switch Stuart back to bowling first change, but we'll chat about that in practice during the week.
Talking a little bit more about roles and plans, there's a lot of moments in cricket that you can foresee. You were talking about a certain bowler bowling to a certain batsman because, you know, it's almost like a set piece, isn't it? You know the batsman's going to be opening the batting. But there are also flexible moments, especially when you're in the field and things perhaps aren't going according to plan. So how flexible are you in the middle when you're having to think of 20 different things at once?
Well, I think you have to be flexible, really, in cricket, I think. And that's one of the beauties of cricket is that quite often things don't go to plan. It depends on a lot of different things. It depends on the players delivering the roles that you've asked them to do. but from a captaincy point of view, being flexible enough to change things if it's not working. And that's what we did actually on Saturday, was that Stuart, by his own admission, didn't start too well with the new ball, so he only bowled two overs and then came off, and we tried one of our other seamers, and then brought Stuart back on a little bit later on. So, I think that's the enjoyable part, or one of the enjoyable parts of captaincy for me is trying to read the game and trying to be flexible and trying to almost get a sense for and second guess what's happening and what's about to happen and what might happen if you make a particular decision. And you certainly don't always get it right, but that's I suppose that's the key to good captaincy, is being able to see the game and read the game and sort of fit the player's skills to what's required in a particular moment of a particular match.
How do you manage those roles for individual players? Is it something you'll speak with people one to one about, or do you have team meetings?
Probably more one to one. If there's a change to be made, or if I'm asking someone to do something specific or different to what they're used to do, then I would try and speak to that person individually. We would talk maybe more as a team on game days about specific plans or specific targets for a particular game. But certainly when it comes to roles and responsibilities and individual stuff, then I would try and speak to the players on an individual basis about that.
And what about a little preview of next week's game? Who have you got, and where do you see the key battles happening?
Yeah, well, we've got a big game on Saturday. We're playing against Grange, who won the competition last year, and we finished second, so it's the top two playing against each other from last year, and they're traditionally one of the stronger teams in the competition. So it'll be a pretty good indication in terms of where we're at, just to see how we go in that game. So they've got a strong team, a fairly experienced team, probably a more experienced team than we have, and the ground they play on is a good ground, a flat wicket, so it should actually be a really good game of cricket, and hopefully we can obviously come out on the right end of the result.
Good luck. Congratulations on your first win of the season, and we'll be checking in next week to find out if you can make it 2 out of 2.
Thanks a lot.
That's the end of the show, and as I mentioned in the questions section, you do get a chance to win a prize of an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy if your question is the one that's answered. So Berners, who is the winner of this week's question competition?
We're going to give it to Naveen. He likes throwdowns and I like throwdowns, and he's going to now take your advice and have more enjoyable throwdowns, so I think it's Naveen.
One thing I love about throwdowns is you can't get out.
It's great, isn't it? I always try and pin the other bloke as well. Just smash it straight back at him.
he's busy practicing his straight drive, and you try and take his head off.
Yeah, that's the way.
Okay, well, how can you get in touch with us in the show if you want your question answered in a future show?
You can drop us an email. Our email address: mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com, or alternatively, give us a quick call. Our number here is 020-88-167-691.
You can also follow us on Twitter. That's PB Cricket Coach, our Twitter name. So if you like a bit of tweeting and a bit of twittering, then head over there. And don't forget, you can subscribe in iTunes. If you go to iTunes and do a search for Pitch Vision Academy, you'll find us there. And also, if you use any other podcast catching program, maybe you listen to us on your phone, which is all very modern, then you can find the feed at pitchvision.com under our podcast section, which is in the green bar along the top. That's all for this week, and next week we've got a very special show, so stay tuned to listen for that. But for now, see you next time.